You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea. But you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
As a prepper, facts mean life. It's a good idea to have the facts before you need them. We've got your answers at survivalcd.com. Hi, I'm Rich Fleetwood, founder of SurvivalRing.org, one of the oldest survival-oriented websites on the web, now in our 18th year. Survival Ring focuses on you, providing thousands of downloadable ebooks on survival preparedness and self-reliance information, all for free. Everything we offer online can be yours without spending weeks or months downloading and organizing every file yourself. We've created the Survival CD package made up of 14 multimedia discs, all easily accessed with any computer, with a DVD drive and web browser. Save time and get everything in a package that only takes up 1 inch of shelf space. When you prepare, you want to know history and what threats are most likely where you live. With over 30 gigabytes of preparedness and survival resources, Survival CD gives you everything in one wonderful package, full of useful, always needed, old school knowledge for when the world gets a bit too crazy and out of control. Add to your plans and abilities with SurvivalCD.com's package of appropriate technology information, manuals, history, how-tos, and good old-fashioned American know-how. SurvivalCD.com, your family emergency preparedness digital library.
I'm Dr. Prepper. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next minute or so with this preparedness radio presentation of A Lifestyle Moment by the Lifestyle Prepper, my Italian friend, Al Di Liberto.
An elderly carpenter was ready to retire. He told his employer contractor of his plans to leave the house building business and live a more leisurely life with his wife, enjoying his extended family. He would miss the paycheck, but he needed to retire. They could get by. The contractor was sorry to see his good worker go and asked if he could build just one more house as a personal favor. The carpenter said yes, but in time it was easy to see that his heart was not in his work. He resorted to shoddy workmanship and used inferior materials. It was an unfortunate way to end a dedicated career. When the carpenter finished his work, the employer came to inspect the house. He handed the front door key to the carpenter. "This is your house," he said. "My gift to you." The carpenter was shocked. What a shame! If he had only known he was building his own house, he would have done it all so differently. So it is with us. We build our lives a day at a time, often putting less than our best into the building. Then, with a shock, we realize we have to live in the house we have built. If we could do it over, we'd do it much differently. But we cannot go back. We're carpenters. Each day we hammer a nail, place a board, or erect a wall. Folks, you might want to share this story about the carpenter with your children or grandchildren, just as I have done with mine. They'll remember it, and it may benefit them as they build their own lives. That's all I've got to say today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Al, for sharing that lifestyle moment. Listeners can discover more about health discount dental and medical plans for preppers and all other American families at SaveMoneyOnHealthcare.com.
Hello and welcome to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. How are you this week, John?
Doing good. How are you doing, Sierra? Doing really well.
Pretty good. Is it being like weird and glitchy again, or can you hear me okay?
No, it sounds great, actually. This is probably the best it's sounded ever.
All right, good.
Sounding good.
The studio didn't give me much issues today, so I'm hoping it stays good.
Yeah.
We have some very exciting guests that are going to be on. First, we're going to have Francis White from Steppables. Steppables is a company that provides lawn alternatives that are better for your bare feet than just regular grass. And after Francis is on, we're going to hear from Sean and Jordan Jackson Fisher from Flagship Romance, a folk duo from Jacksonville, Florida. They are going to talk to us about their experience playing at a nudist convention and about the Clean Water Music Festival that they organize and host each year. So lots of exciting, super cool guests. The coolest guests we've had in a while. But first, we have a not-so-happy article from BuzzFeed that's gotten quite a bit of attention this week. It's called 19 Pictures That Prove Monsters Live Among Us. And yeah, it's all pictures of people barefoot in public that were taken off of Twitter. Because, you know, there's nothing weird about taking pictures of people and then posting them on Twitter in front of them. So yeah, there's a guy in a public washroom or restroom, as you Americans would say. He's in the bathroom, minding his own business, and somebody says, nothing weird about this guy taking a barefoot crap at a public bathroom. Yeah, like I said, nah, nothing weird about the fact that these people were, you know, had their picture taken, most of them probably without their permission and posted on the internet. Nothing weird about that at all, no. A guy walking around Walmart barefoot. The person who posted the picture said, this guy is literally barefoot at Walmart. Like, why? How even? A guy on a treadmill. Barefoot treadmill guy. A guy walking it. This guy just came out of Chick-fil-A barefoot. Behind the barefoot guy in the ATM queue. There's tons of these. Huh. This guy comes to class barefoot every day. I swear, granolas will be the end of humanity. Granolas being people who do things like as natural as possible. And in other train news, this guy thought it would be okay to go barefoot on the subway. Yeah, there's lots of people. Someone in an actual subway restaurant, pumping gas, Target, Chipotle, Wendy's, McDonald's, Taco Bell, movie theater, pharmacy, riding a bus, boarding a plane, getting coffee. And so lots of people have been making some pretty hate-filled comments on this article. I don't even know if you'd call it an article, more like clickbait. People are saying it's disgusting. Who knows what's on the ground? A lot of people from New Zealand and Australia commented on it, confused as to why this is news, because in other parts of the world that aren't foot phobic like the US is, it's actually quite normal to go everywhere barefoot. We've had a couple people from New Zealand on the show before talking about how they don't get it, why Americans are so scared of feet. So what did you think of this so-called article, John?
Well, every place you've mentioned, I'm sure you have as well, but I've been barefoot in every single place you've mentioned. And obviously, I don't think there's any problem with it. I mean, not the article, the going barefoot part. I don't understand. To me, when people have to lash out at other people on, you know, what they're doing, they need to look inwards as to, you know, why is it bothering them? What is it that's causing it to bother them? Because there's nothing wrong with it.
Right. And I was able to reach out to one of the people who posted one of these tweets, the guy who posted about the guy barefoot at the ATM. I asked him to come on the radio show, and he said he was not interested in coming on the radio show, but he did chat with me a little bit. He says he has no issues with going barefoot in public, but it's environment specific. He says going barefoot in the urban environment seems equal parts unwise, and look at how unconventional I am. And I said, well, I get what you're saying, but feet adapt pretty quickly. So urban barefooting isn't, you know, dangerous. Because he said, you know, if you're playing frisbee in a park barefoot or something like that, he wouldn't think that was weird because it's on grass. And it's totally safe, but sidewalks can tear your feet up. And he agreed that it was probably true that feet can adapt quickly. But he said, I parked my car next to fly-covered pile of human excrement today and was grateful for my shoes. And yeah, so that's basically his reason for liking to wear shoes in the city is so he doesn't step in really nasty things, which is fine. If you are more comfortable wearing shoes, that's totally fine. But that's no reason to shame people who choose not to. And we get a lot of that on Twitter. And in social media in general. Like, we've talked about how if you search on Twitter barefoot and pretty much any undesirable term that you would not want applied to you, something will come up. Like, I don't even know. We've done a bunch of case studies on this before. Market research, as John calls it.
Yeah. It's crazy that people are so, you know, of all this, it cracks me up. You'll watch people doing all kinds of crazy things, and well, I shouldn't use the word crazy, but you know, bungee jumping or skateboarding off of rails or doing, you know, all kinds of physical activities, and they're scared to death that something's going to happen to them barefoot. You know, it just blows me away. Not that I have a problem going to a park barefoot, but to me, it probably would be more of a risk than it is going to an urban place, you know, because you're around sticks and rocks and twigs and you know, some of those pointy things that fall off a tree. I don't know what you call them. But,
pine needles? Those are awful.
The little sticker ball ones. They're about the size of a ball.
Yeah, also awful.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, so to me, like I said before, I think during the Industrial Revolution, when things were made more of raw materials, you know, you might have had more of an issue walking around barefoot. But now, what are you going to do? Step on a plastic fork, you know, a styrofoam box? Yeah. what's really the problem?
Yeah, well, a lot of people that are barefooters have responded to the ignorant comments on this article. And there's one lady, her name is Mariana Werleman. She gave me permission to use her comments. She says, I've done it for the past 20 years and literally never regretted it, even for a minute. Feet are a lot tougher than many people think. I've also gone barefoot in places with lots of glass and no injuries. Even a tiny splinter happens at most once a year. Just in case, keep your tetanus up to date. Once every 10 years is enough. But I would advise that to anyone, regardless if they ever put a bare toe on the floor anyway, you can't get tetanus only from stepping on stuff, but also from injuries while gardening, from scrapes, from animals, including pets, etc. As for other diseases, our skin is made to keep pathogens out, and we're at far greater risk of picking something up with our hands. With them, we touch objects many other people touch, like doorknobs, railings, shopping carts and baskets, push buttons, etc., etc. And then we're more likely to touch our face or our food, allowing those germs to enter our body, even if you wash up before dinner. Who never eats a snack or cookie without washing? Our feet are on or near the ground and remain there. Just don't prop them up with or without shoes. Fungal infections are also pretty much limited to those who go barefoot briefly in pools, locker rooms, etc., and then put on closed footwear again. The spores from athlete's foot and nail fungus are fungi. They prefer a warm, dark, and slightly damp place to grow like the inside of a shoe. On the bare skin, exposed to light and fresh air, they don't get a chance. Fungal infections are extremely rare among full-time barefooters and can be prevented by part-time barefooters by washing and drying your feet well before you put shoes back on. Someone going barefoot will not put you, your children, or anyone else at risk. Germs don't jump off the soles of a barefoot any more than off the soles of a shoe. There are two ways in which you, your children, or anyone else could pick something up from a barefooter. One is if you were barefoot too and walking in the same places, especially in places where many people go barefoot, like a locker room, pool area, or in line at the airport. Even then, our skin is made to keep pathogens out, and the spores from a fungus likely won't be able to get hold if you remain barefoot. The greatest risk is if you put footwear back on after. That gives anything you picked up a nice, warm, dark, and often slightly damp place to grow. On a store floor, sidewalk, etc., it is extremely unlikely anything will live long enough to be picked up by another barefooter at all. And if one remains barefoot, it is unlikely to do harm. The second thing is if someone were rude enough to prop up their feet on a table, armrests in theaters, or on public transport, allowing germs from the floor to get where people put their hands and food. But that's the same regardless of whether the person propping up their feet is wearing footwear or socks or nothing at all. About washing hands, I do wash my hands. In fact, I'm more aware of what does and does not pose a risk than most other people. Over the years, I've had to accompany my mother to chemotherapy, and that meant spending the day in a hospital ward with several other patients who were usually accompanied by a family member as well. The chemo took long to administer, and I sat around at the coffee table used by everyone, reading the magazines that were clearly well-read and handled by patients and visitors alike. So of course, when I had to help my mom and bring her tea, help her with lunch, or whatever, I washed my hands. Yet in about 20 to 30 such chemo appointments over the years, with always different other patients and visitors, not once did I see any other visitor or family caretaker wash their hands, except immediately after a restroom visit. They put the grubby magazine down and went straight to making tea or cutting bread. Yes, I was barefoot, but I was also the only one who didn't work there who actually did wash my hands. Additional fact, not one doctor had any problem with my bare feet, and we met quite a few before the final diagnosis was made. I love all of the kind informational statements that are made in there in a very clear, direct, and polite manner. That was absolutely the perfect way to handle the attacks on barefooters that were going on in that comment section. And there were other notable barefooters that also made some great comments, but Mariana's were just so detailed and polite and not agenda pushing. You know, not referring anyone to outside websites that promote barefooting. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the people who are making these statements are the kind of people that you're not going to be able to convince with adding a link to a website. But by clearly and politely stating facts, she was able to confront some of the myths that are out there. So good on her for that. Normally we do tweet at the beginning of the show, but since that whole article was made of tweets, I think we're pretty much covered for that. Plus, I'd like totally have not been doing my Twitter research this week because I've been reading Felicia Day's new book, You're Never Weird on the Internet, almost, which is amazing. And she does mention going barefoot in there twice in the, like, 13 chapters. There's two sentences. So it's, you know, that counts as work research, right? But she said her mom wouldn't let her go to public school in, she grew up in Alabama and Mississippi. Her mom wouldn't let her go to public school because of all the kids that went to school barefoot. So she put her in religious school and then homeschooled her because her mom didn't want her going to school with those other barefoot kids. And also the high teen pregnancy rate was also a concern that was brought up in there. But
yeah. The ironic part is, you know, private schools are more likely to let someone go barefoot than public schools.
I don't know about that.
There are a few that are, you know, private schools that are more, I've read about.
Well, good to know that. If I ever send my kid to school and they make him wear shoes, I'll look into private schools.
Yeah, not all of them. I mean, there's a few of them out there that have. I'll look back and find that.
I know there are some schools that do have a barefoot allowance. Like they let kids be barefoot in the classroom or just wear socks. So I know there are more schools that are doing that now, which is good.
The name of one of the schools, it's not in Florida, but I think the name of one of the schools is Clearwater, I remember reading about. And they're allowed to go barefoot anywhere in school.
Awesome. We should look that place up and I'll move there because they sound very barefoot friendly. There's also an article published pretty recently, trying to find it here, but it's about letting your kids go barefoot because it's better for them. And it was really good. And I lost it and can't find it now. Where did it go? It's lost in the internet. Anyways, there's new research showing that kids develop the neural connections in their brain better if they are going barefoot, which would definitely make sense to me logically, just because when you're barefoot, your feet are actually sending sensory information to your brain about the surfaces you're standing on instead of the flat, dark, warm inside of a shoe. And so since the brain is receiving more signals, it would of course have to make the connections quicker to be able to interpret and respond to those signals. What do you think, John?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It is something, especially for kids as they're learning. It's important at all ages, but have that connection as they're learning is very critical.
Absolutely.
And more than that, it's, you know, their bones aren't even developed until your late teens. And
right.
Human shoes is another reason, you know, you don't want to do that.
There has been some media attention to the dangers of going barefoot lately. There's an article that was posted on nakeddiaries.wordpress.com talking about injuries incurred while walking barefoot. Basically not paying attention to outdoor conditions resulted in second degree burns on this poor guy's foot. And there are some quite graphic pictures. Like, it's really, really disgusting. The skin is completely gone and you can see the like pink underflesh, and there's a bit of third degree burn where it's all brown and black. So yeah, you need to, even though summer's starting to wind down, it's still very hot in a lot of places. So please be aware of outdoor conditions when you venture outside barefoot, because it's dangerously hot.
Especially if you're new to going barefoot. If it's something you've grown accustomed to, you're going to know your limits and know very quickly when you can and cannot. And tolerance will increase. Especially if you're in a warm climate as I am and you go barefoot. I've never really burnt my feet, but I've been on some severely hot asphalt. But I think just building up the resistance, I think the danger, you know, when they list dangers of people of going barefoot, the danger is people that wear shoes all the time and then they go barefoot. Well, yeah. That's where the problem lies.
Yeah, well, I had some friends, they were telling me this week, they went to the beach and they'd walk from their car to the water and they went barefoot and they were like freaking out about how hot it was. And it was 36 Celsius that day, which is handy dandy Google, 96.8 Fahrenheit. So it was pretty hot, but yeah, because their feet are used being inside these protective, as they call them, foot prisons where they don't get any tactile stimulation or feedback from the environment ever, it was very painful for them to, you know, sprint it was almost a half a mile to the water from where they parked. So they were uncomfortable for a long time after that.
I can remember spending many of a vacation in Daytona Beach, and there would be people that, you know, practically did nothing else but play volleyball on the beach. And even when it was getting too hot for me, they were still out playing barefoot and didn't seem to be bothered by it. So I think it's, you know, just depends on how much resistance you've built up. And they literally
live. A lot of it, there's biological factors as well in terms of what your personal, what your pain tolerance is, what your heat tolerance is. How hydrated you are also has a major effect, because if you are dehydrated, then you are actually going to get hot faster because you're not able to sweat. And if you have been eating a lot of sodium and not drinking enough water to flush it out, your body will end up retaining water. And so you'll have water in your feet, and in cold conditions, that'll make you get frostbite faster. So cold and hot kind of survival tactics. A lot of it isn't just your tolerance to the temperature. There are things you can do in your diet to improve that as well.
Very true. And I think the most important thing is just learn what your limits are, you know, and respect it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a good idea to force yourself to do something that you are not comfortable doing. It's not going to be healthy for you at the end of the day if your feet are scorching hot or freezing cold. It might put you off from going barefoot for a long time, if not forever. You know, I did a TV interview about 4 or 5 years ago that the news reporter was just like, oh, well, you know, if you can walk barefoot in snow, it can't be that hard, right? So this news reporter that's never walked barefoot in winter before takes off his shoes and, you know, he's like, so how far can you go? And I'm like, how far do you want to go? So we start walking. We're just 7th house on the street. We're going to walk to the end of the street and back. And about quarter of the way there, it gets too cold and had to run back to the house because it's an overtime acclimatization thing. And he told me when we got back in the house, I'm never doing that again. I'm never going barefoot in the snow. That was horrible. It was so cold. It's definitely something you have to build up to, heat and cold, both of them.
Exactly. That's something that turns a lot of people off to going barefoot, is the few times that they've done it, it wasn't a pleasant experience because their feet were not conditioned to it. You know,
exactly.
It's kind of like, if you never go to the gym and then go to the gym, it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. We are going to go to an ad break because there is a horse on my front lawn and I need to go figure out what's going on. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
So, Al, you're in the restaurant business, and you say your dishwasher accidentally locked your night manager in the freezer, and the AM cook mistook him for an ice carving, and he put him in the middle of the lunch buffet, and when he thawed out, he sneezed, and a very frail lady from the Northside Sewing Club ended up in the fettuccine Alfredo. Is that what's troubling you, paisano?
That's not all of it. The frozen manager went to his attorney and froze my bank account, and checks have been bouncing all day, and my brother-in-law agreed to loan if I give his kid a job as a waiter, and a guy has painted teeth and rings on his eyelids that jingle whenever he takes an order, and a sprinkler system goes off when he walks by.
And you say that the pizza guy tossed a pizza in the air and it never came down, and your French baker was picked up by the INS and deported to South America by mistake, and when she heard about it, his mother sent you a thank you card with a check for $1,000 in it, but she didn't sign it, and you were feeling awful that a mother could treat a son like that when a letter came from your parents saying that, since they hadn't heard from you, they assumed that you died and changed their will, leaving everything to your sister, who's married to your brother-in-law, who gave you the loan. Is that what's twisting your pepperoni, pal?
Yeah, when I got in my new European car yesterday morning and turned the wheel to the left, the car went to the right. And when I came home that night, there was a recall notice in my mailbox saying that the company had accidentally installed a British steering system in some American cars and asked me to drive my car in for a replacement. But on the way there, I hit a hearse, and that reminded me how short our time is here. So I went faster and ended up in the lobby of the dealership with the car, and they fixed the car, but the bill for the plate glass window was $3,700, and when the insurance company found out about it, they canceled me in arrears because I had backed up after the accident.
And you mentioned that when a chubby-looking lady came into the restaurant last night, she was wearing a tent dress, you smiled and asked her when the baby was coming, and he told you that he wasn't pregnant, and the lady he was with struck you in the tummy with an umbrella and snapped your eyeglasses, so now you see double, and saw two chairs, and sat down in the one that wasn't there, and now you not only have two belly buttons, but three buttocks, and there isn't a chair made that will let you sit down in comfort for the next 2 weeks? Is that what loosened your lasagna, Lumpy?
And last week, I went to one of those restaurants that advertise all you can eat for $5.95, and when I ate my food and went back for more, the owner grabbed the plate and said, that's all you can eat for $5.95. So I went to another restaurant the next day, and the food was so awful that I couldn't eat it. So I told the waiter, go get the...
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show. Beginning at 9 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices.
So, Al, you're in the restaurant business, and you say your dishwasher accidentally locked your night manager in the freezer, and the AM cook mistook him for an ice carving, and he put him in the middle of the lunch buffet, and when he thawed out, he sneezed, and a very frail lady from the Northside Sewing Club ended up in the fettuccine Alfredo. Is that what's troubling you, paisano?
That's not all of it. The frozen manager went to his attorney and froze my bank account, and checks have been bouncing all day, and my brother-in-law agreed to loan if I give his kid a job as a waiter, and a guy has painted teeth and rings on his eyelids that jingle whenever he takes an order, and a sprinkler system goes off when he walks by.
And you say that the pizza guy tossed a pizza in the air and it never came down, and your French baker was picked up by the INS and deported to South America by mistake, and when she heard about it, his mother sent you a thank you card with a check for $1,000 in it, but she didn't sign it, and you were feeling awful that a mother could treat a son like that when a letter came from your parents saying that, since they hadn't heard from you, they assumed that you died and changed their will, leaving everything to your sister, who's married to your brother-in-law, who gave you the loan. Is that what's twisting your pepperoni, pal?
Yeah, when I got in my new European car yesterday morning and turned the wheel to the left, the car went to the right. And when I came home that night, there was a recall notice in my mailbox saying that the company had accidentally installed a British steering system in some American cars and asked me to drive my car in for a replacement. But on the way there, I hit a hearse, and that reminded me how short our time is here. So I went faster and ended up in the lobby of the dealership with the car, and they fixed the car, but the bill for the plate glass window was $3,700, and when the insurance company found out about it, they canceled me in a because I had backed up after the accident.
And you mentioned that when a chubby-looking lady came into the restaurant last night, she was wearing a tent dress, you smiled and asked her when the baby was coming, and he told you that he wasn't pregnant, and the lady he was with struck you in the tummy with an umbrella and snapped your eyeglasses, so now you see double, and saw two chairs, and sat down in the one that wasn't there, and now you not only have two belly buttons, but three buttocks, and there isn't a chair made that will let you sit down in comfort for the next 2 weeks? Is that what loosened your lasagna, Lumpy?
And last week, I went to one of those restaurants that advertised all you can eat for $5.95, and when I ate my food and went back for more, the owner grabbed the plate and said, that's all you can eat for $5.95. So I went to another restaurant the next day, and the food was so awful that I couldn't eat it. So I told the waiter, go get the manager, and the waiter said, it's no use, he won't eat it either.
And when you played your mandolin and you asked if there were any requests, the big guy requested that you stop playing, and when you asked him if he didn't appreciate good music, he said it wasn't the music, it was your face that was not allowing him to enjoy his eggplant parmigiana, since it reminded him of a member of his neighbor's barnyard, and that if he had a nose like that, he'd rent himself to a termite detection company. Is that what's been stretching your noodles, Paisano? Well, Al, buckle up your pants, stand up, wash your hands, march out there, salute the flag, sing O Solo Mio, ring a bell, take a deep breath, smell the cannolis, have a pepperoni pizza, eat a Bambino Huey, and get on the radio and let the whole world know that you'll never, never, never give up the olive oil.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. Sorry about the weird ad break that had lots of weird noises going on. John, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. I can hear you fine.
Okay. Okay. We were having weirdness going on in the studio, but we have our first guest, Frances White from Steppables.com. Bring her on. Hello, Frances. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Very good, thanks.
Good morning,
awesome.
Frances.
We're so glad you could come on the show. Frances' company, Steppables.com, is a company that specializes in alternatives to grass for your lawn. They have all sorts of different products that will be better for you than a lawn, eco-friendly, sustainable, and you don't have to mow it. And they feel good to step on. Frances, can you tell us a little bit about your company, how it got started?
Sure. In, I don't know, I think it was 1989. I've had a wholesale nursery since 1990, and I'm 5'2", so I grew small plants and always had a very huge collection of small miniature creeping perennials and ground covers, and sold them to the wholesale market here in Oregon and Washington. And in 1999 or so, a landscaper come out and he wanted stuff to go between stepping stones. And as I developed my own ground cover line in throughout the Northwest, I noticed that most of the garden centers really didn't have much of a selection for stuff going between stepping stones. And when this landscaper came out and he wanted something specifically that you could walk on, I showed him all of my wares. And he said, "Nah, you can't step on those." And I jumped up and down on them. And he said, "Oh my gosh, they're Steppables." And I went out immediately and trademarked the name. And within about a year, sent out press releases. And we got on Good Morning America. And all kinds of crazy stuff happened to us. And away we went into a national distribution.
That's awesome. Glad you're able to have such success with it. Do you know what the benefit of using your Steppables would be as opposed to other things you could have in your lawn?
Well, there's a lawn substitution is a broad category. You can use all kinds of things. You don't have to specifically stay to creeping ground covers. You can go in, you could use hostas and ferns if you wanted to. You could use all succulents. You could use a number of different things because it really depends on what your fancy is, what the purpose is for your lawn area. Is it ornamental or is it actually going to be used for croquet, football, soccer, whatnot? And so you have to ask yourself the first and very foremost question is, what is the purpose of my lawn area? Our plant material is creeping perennials and low ground covers. And so for the sake of that conversation, our plants are better to walk on than, say, an English ivy. An English ivy is going to get 14, 24 inches high. Well, none of our plants get that high. They're most plants, especially for the lawn substitution areas, are specifically 1/4 inch to 2 inches high. And the more you walk on them, the flatter they get. So it's just a different animal when you think about lawn substitution And then, like I said, you have to ask yourself, what's the purpose? That's the biggest and most important question to ask.
Awesome. On the website, you have a slogan that says, "Feels good to go green." Mm-hmm. Do all of your steppables feel good to walk on? Are there any that wouldn't be advisable to walk on barefoot?
You know, there are a few. Yes, I would say, for example, Acana, which is in our A's. Everything's alphabeticalized. A C E A N A. The Acanas are really neat foliage. They're beautiful colors, blues and reds and bronze and greens, but they have a spur at the end of them. So the flower has this beautiful little flower, cream flower to it, and then it ends up getting this actual burr to it, that like a cat's tail, you know, that it catches in your clothes. Very uncomfortable.
Right.
I would stay away from those. Other than that, I don't think that there are any that are, you know, extremely not friendly as far as foot traffic goes. Those are just ones that people like them because of the color. I actually have them around my yard and my landscape, but I deadhead them before they reach the pod stage. So that's a way to eliminate them. So you get the color without the seed pod.
So if we were to make an ideal kind of ornamental lawn out of these steppables, are there any that have health benefits that you can get from smelling them or being around them, walking on them, absorbing their oils or anything?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have probably one of my favorites is Corsican mint. The botanical name on that is Mentha requinii. And Corsican mint is a really neat, shady, semi-moist area lawn substitution. It smells like mint, so it's one of the most wonderful things to put in your front walkway, because as you have people who come into your home, it releases, as you walk on it, it releases the aroma of mint. Very cool. Very cool. I actually found this plant in a garden of a friend of mine's, and there was this giant hill, and I had my kids with me who were about 6 and 8, 6 or 10, and he told them to go run over there and roll all over the hill. Well, they did, and it was ridiculous the whole way back. My entire car smelt like mint because it just stayed on their clothes and everything else. It was nice, but it was a little much. But Corsican mint's a beautiful plant to have. The other ones are the thymes. We carry a lot of different thymes, and all of them will send off some sort of aroma when you walk on them. So just depending on what kind of thyme it is, you know, some of them have a lemon scent, and some of them have a musty thyme scent to them.
That's awesome.
We also have a chamomile. So we have a dwarf chamomile with no flower on it, and then we have one that does flower. And so those are very cool, very fast growing, and certainly durable, and very tough zone hardiness on those as well. So there's some pretty good choices out there.
That's pretty awesome. Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, are they region-specific, depending on what part of the country?
All of our plants are region-specific. We have 228 varieties in the program because we would like to be able to reach people in Florida, in Michigan, and in Southern California, as well as Quebec and, you know, all around North America. So everybody's a little bit different, trying to find a plant material that will work that's blue and red and orange and green. Kind of like your outdoor carpeting, and then trying to find regionally what will work for someone. Because most of these plants, what we do is they're problem-solving perennials. And so somebody might have a downspout that they need a plant to go around because they're tired of mulching it all the time. Or they might have a dry rock area, or they might have lawn substitution. And all of those zones, you know, one plant does not fit all. So we definitely have to be regional specific.
Yeah,
sounds like you've got the whole market covered.
Well, you know, there's a lot of plants still to put into our program. People have a need. somebody wants blue, and I've got to find a plant that will work in Tennessee and Michigan, and that's hard to do. So that's where we're in our 15th year of our program of Steppables, and every year it gets a little bit different because we find new plant material to put in for folks.
That's excellent. Could you talk a little bit about the creative process for the design of your logo, the footprint with the Steppables that says Got Soul on it? I just think that's so cute.
Yeah, where are you at? Just so I'm looking at the right one.
On the website, it looks like it's like a thing that you stick in the plants that talks about them, like what it's good for.
Oh, the tag?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Well, when we first started, you know, we knew we wanted to do foot traffic, and this was I developed the entire concept. So it was, Steppables wasn't even a word. So we first had to trademark it, and then we actually trademarked the shape of the foot. So we own the shape of the foot in horticulture. And so it was really trying to get a concept across to folks. How can you walk on these? And it definitely became clear that by showing photos of the plant material, not just close-up shots of color blooms and stuff like that, but also showing people how to, what can be done with all of this. The foot-shaped tag really helped us become iconic in a garden center. You know where we're at. It's not hard to find us. And so that was a real pivotal part for our marketing program to develop that. Our first one was a monster foot. It actually, I think, had 6 toes. It was hideous.
Wow.
It was terrible. But it was our first attempt at it. And as we grew as a marketing company, it became quite clear about what we were supposed to be doing with all of this and what people wanted from us. And so the foot shape became everything for us. And like I said, it's very iconic. You can't miss us anywhere. And so it's a devil of a thing trying to develop a tag and trying to get the blooms exactly in the toes correctly. So there's a process to it.
Well, it looks awesome. It's pretty. It gets the point across. We found out about you through Pinterest. Somebody had pinned a picture of someone just standing on. They'd put one of your products around their stepping stones on their pathway, and they just a picture of them standing barefoot on that. It was good.
Yeah.
Good advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, it's not. The proof's in the pudding. I've always had to have a company that I always figured that my parents would be proud of. And so it became very important to me to make sure that our R&D was, in fact, real. We've had tons and tons of people who have copied our program, and they really don't do any R&D. They just sort of copy what we do first. And so you really have to spend a lot of time trying to develop a program in which you can develop, you know, how much foot traffic will a plant take? How much car traffic will a plant take? You know, how much sun, how much light, what zone? How fast will they grow? What kind of soil will they need? All of these things are things that we've done in research in order to be able to give a product that is successful in a gardener's home.
That's excellent. I do have one question. Do you carry creeping juniper?
No.
That's the one I want. Can't find it anywhere.
Really? No, you know,
yeah.
It's more of a woody ground cover, and so it doesn't grow fast in a pot, which makes the growers nuts. And it's a little prickly. I guess it depends on which creeping juniper, because there's lots of junipers in the world. And so, we don't carry them, but, you know, I suspect that you could. I've never found a juniper that I grew up in SoCal, so we had lots of junipers. I never liked them. They always made me itch.
I have a question. I'm in Jacksonville, Florida,
mm-hmm.
and have areas around trees, you know, where there's a lot of roots, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the grass will grow up around it, and, you know, it just becomes a real maintenance challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be your first thought there?
Well, first of all, you need to determine how much light the area takes, because as much as you could find, I had a lady last week who really, really wanted this plant, and it was a shade plant, and she had full sun, but she really liked the looks of it. And it's like, but you can't plant it there. It's just going to die. So before you spend any money, you know, there's questions that you need to ask yourself. How much light do I have to the area so that you can determine the right plant? How much water do you have to the area? Because if you're hand watering versus using an automatic irrigation, that means that there's some human error there. And then you just have to really be honest with yourself and say, you know what, I barely water outside, or I water a lot. Because what happens in, if you're really good at this, I can give you a plant that will work. If you're terrible, I can give you a plant that'll work. But we have to determine how those things go. If the water, if the area needs some more light, then we would probably talk about, if you liked a plant that was more sunny, how to cut a couple of branches down, those kinds of things. How to mulch it in that deep-rooted soil. You're going to have to make some determinations of what you can do, because tearing away soil at the base of a tree can harm the tree, and topsoiling it can also harm the tree if you do too deep. So you got to be real smart about what you would use and how you would do it. I would tell you, though, to look at the Lysmachia. It's called Creeping Jenny, and that'll be great for your zone. It'll do a part shade to part sun area. It'll do a full shade area. And we've got a green and a gold. And the gold really bounces in a shady area. It makes a very illuminating effect in your landscape, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
You're certainly an expert in your plants.
Yes.
Well, like I said, it's been a while. So it took us a long time to find out. What was funny was, after we got off on Good Morning America, we were on HGTV Gardening by the Yard. And that was, I think, our second year on the national scene. And we were flooded from the segment. They did about a 7-minute segment on just steppables, which was pretty unheard of. And we were flooded with about 10,000 emails and phone calls right away from that episode. And that was where most of this developed from, is what are people looking for? And we could then cater what they were actually asking for to be able to develop a program that suits the consumer, not necessarily our marketplace, but more to consumer driven.
Wow, that must have been quite a shock.
It was. Do you remember the UPS commercial that they first got on the internet and they first started their website, and then the numbers kept chiming in over and over and over again, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger? That was us. It just got ridiculous pretty fast.
Unbelievable.
Wow. It's a great success story. Have you had any issues with non-native plants becoming invasive?
No, I do not believe that to be something that's become an issue. Creepers are creepers. The ground cover means covering ground. If you're putting a ground cover in, you need to know that it's going to cover. It's not something, they didn't come up with a name because it barely did anything. Ground covers, we always talk about how they're one person's nightmare and another person's dream, because people have reasons to use ground covers. That it's not like an annual that they just pop it in and say, okay, that's good. They're really needy about it. I have this spot is the number one thing we hear from people. As soon as they get on the phone, the first thing they say in an email or a phone call is, I have this spot, because they're frustrated. And these plants solve people's problems in their landscape, but they creep. So you have to ask yourself, I'm frequently asked, well, I'd like to intermix a couple of these plants. Well, it becomes a problem because what we've done is we've regulated and determined these plants by speed and foot traffic. So you have a slow plant, a moderate plant, and a fast plant. Okay. And then you have a foot traffic. You have a light, a moderate, and heavy foot traffic. So you have to ask yourself, how much foot traffic is the area going to take? And how much maintenance am I going to want to do? How much is my budget? If you pick a fast-growing plant, you need less of them to fill in the area, but that fast-growing plant is going to keep going because it's fast. So then you're going to have a maintenance issue. So as long as you're good with that, you can maintain it. If you put it on the edge of your lawn and it creeps into your neighbor's lawn, then you need to take some responsibility for that and put up some edging and whatnot so that it doesn't do that. But you can't. Either that, or you put a slow plant in, plant more of them so it fills in, but it doesn't get away from you. So there's all of these different things that you would need to ask yourself in order to get the right plant for you. Otherwise, you kind of have a monster on your hands that creeps everywhere, and you're like, oy vey, you know, can I just get it out of here? So you really need to determine in your landscape, do you want something that runs around? Do you want something to just cover and you don't care where it goes? Or are you really finicky about those lines? And gardeners, trust me, if anybody out there is listening on the show, you know who you are. I have particular lines I like to keep. So my ground cover, my beds are display beds, but they're also beds that keep their boundaries. And so when I have a fast guy, I usually put in a pot versus somewhere else because I don't want it to run around everybody else. The strong guy usually wins the race. So a slow creeper is going to be the one that gets overrun by the fast one.
Makes sense.
Yeah, we just have
time for one final question before we need to let you go so we can get our next guest in. If you were to start out with a brand new home with no lawn covering at all, what would the price to put Steppables lawn covering in be compared to sodding the yard? Is it pretty close to the same, much cheaper, much more expensive?
It's comparable to putting in stone. So hardscaping, when you take a look at it, seeding a lawn, you know, you got to till it and roll it and then seed it. Well, that's pretty inexpensive because it's mostly your labor doing it. And then there's, you know, two boxes of seed. Putting in plant material is a lot different because it's individual pots. So anywhere in the country, you can get our pots, the plant material in like a 3 1/4 inch pot. That's usually run somewhere between $2.99 and $3.99 a plant. And then you can get packs. And those usually run about $12-$15 bucks a pack. So it's a comparable price of, say, about $3 a plant. Online, we sell them a lot differently because we sell them per flat. So online, it gets delivered to your door. So that's pretty cool. It's about $2 a plant, but they're tiny. So you have to think about your square footage. If you're going to do a lawn substitution, it's you know, basic length times width. And then determining if you're going to get a fast plant or a slow plant, you're going to have to determine how many plants per square foot you're going to plant. A slow one, maybe it only inches about 2 inches to 4 inches a year. So you're probably going to need a couple of those per square foot in order to fill in and have a full lawn area in 1 to 2 years. If you pick a fast one, it goes 12 inches, well, there you go. You got one per square foot. A lot less money, but again, boundary issues, right? So it just really depends on per square foot. You plant that once and you're done. So it's a long-term solution, kind of like doing, you know, solar panels on your house. It'll save you in the end, but it costs you up front versus just having a quick fix of lawn. Did that answer that for you?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
It's probably a lot less maintenance. You don't have to buy a lawnmower and put the gas in the mower every time
you mow. I haven't
had
a lawnmower in 20-some years. I mean, it's really cool. My whole entire landscape is filled with butterflies and bees, and we actually even had wild turkeys a couple weeks ago run through. And this is, you know, in a regular residential area. We have squirrels, all kinds of lovely things because we have a very environmentally friendly landscape. I haven't fertilized in 6 or 7 years, and the gardens are gorgeous. So it can be done, and it can be done with a lot less maintenance than what you would expect. It's just the first part of it is to do your homework right, prep your soil right, make sure that you have good drainage, make sure you pick the right plant so you don't waste any money. And then check out steppables.com, and you always get me anywhere on the site. So if you have any questions or your listeners have any questions, they can email me, and I'll be happy to answer the questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Okay, have a great day. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Frances of Steppables.com chatting about her lawn covering alternatives that are great for foot traffic, especially bare feet, except for one or two of them that have thorns. But she's got hundreds of options on the website, so go ahead and check that out. Posted the link in the FreedomizerRadio.com chat box, so you can just click on that link and check all of that out. We're going to take a quick ad break, and when we come back, we'll be interviewing Sean Fisher and Jordan Jackson Fisher from Flagship Romance about their experiences playing at a nudist colony convention and their efforts to bring access to clean water to third world countries. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
As a prepper, facts mean life. It's a good idea to have the facts before you need them. We've got your answers at SurvivalCD.com. Hi, I'm Rich Fleetwood, founder of SurvivalRing.org, one of the oldest survival-oriented websites on the web, now in our 18th year. Survival Ring focuses on you, providing thousands of downloadable ebooks on survival preparedness and self-reliance information, all for free. Everything we offer online can be yours without spending weeks or months downloading and organizing every file yourself. We've created the Survival CD package made up of 14 multimedia discs, all easily accessed with any computer, with a DVD drive and web browser. Save time and get everything in a package that only takes up 1 inch of shelf space. When you prepare, you want to know history and what threats are most likely where you live. With over 30 gigabytes of preparedness and survival resources, Survival CD gives you everything in one wonderful package, full of useful, always needed, old-school knowledge for when the world gets a bit too crazy and out of control. Add to your plans and abilities with SurvivalCD.com's package of appropriate technology information, manuals, history, how-tos, and good old-fashioned American know-how. SurvivalCD.com, your family emergency preparedness digital library.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
This is Renaissance Revolution. We'll be talking about everything. You don't need an employer, a college, a healthcare bill, a doctor, a financial planner, a preacher, a prophet, or anything else. You can do it all. You do need to hear my show. You don't want to hear me? Fine. Don't listen to my show. You want to now, don't you?
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Seems things are happening so fast now. And again, I want to thank you for the privilege of allowing me to be with your audience and with you tonight. Everyone out there in your listening audience, they should listen to you every single day. Don't you miss a program. Lord bless. Everybody set that spiritual house in order. It's the most important thing out there. Thank you and good night.
Shalom and praises to our Father. Now that the Ruach has revealed that we are in Babylon, it is important that we continue to keep seeking the Father's truth. The best way is to ask that the Ruach HaKodesh to lead us, and with that, let us reason together and listen to the Sound Doctrine Spiritual Ministries Fellowship program right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Join host Betty I. Emanuel, Asad Batia, and our researcher extraordinaire, Iman Prophet, every Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 a.m. Central, as we present the truth according to the set-apart scriptures. As always, stopping by is the occasional guest and set-apart music that honors Father Yah. You can also listen in to the show at 347-324-3704 or join us in our chat room at freedomizerradio.com. Stay in the will of the Father. Peace to your hearts and homes. Shalom.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. We are having some connectivity issues with our next guest, so they are not on yet. We're going to try to sort it out, but if not, we will try to get them on at a later date. While we wait for them, we have an article here for you from Mercola.com, which is a health website, about earthing. It's written by Dr. James Oshman. He's an expert in the field of energy medicine with a bachelor's degree in biophysics and a PhD in biology from the University of Pittsburgh. He's widely recognized as an authority in biophysics of energy medicine, and he's quite educated in the practice of earthing or grounding. So he says, every modern school of alternative medicine talks about energy, although they may use a variety of words to talk about it. What is this fundamental energy you keep hearing about? The owner of this site, Dr. Oshman, was introduced to earthing or grounding, and his research in this area has turned up some very interesting and compelling information about how the energy from the earth can help you live a healthier life. Which, you know, we already know, but it's always great to hear more different perspectives on it. So he talks about the earthing phenomenon, as he calls it. So people have known for a long time that walking barefoot feels good. There are places in the world like Germany and Austria and Switzerland with communities where there's a tradition of getting up in the morning and going barefoot. What happens when you walk barefoot? Your skin is, in general, a very good conductor. You can connect any part of your skin to the earth. But if you compare various parts, there's one that is especially potent, and that's right in the middle of the ball of your foot, a point known to acupuncturists as kidney 1. It's a well-known point that conductively connects to all the acupuncture meridians and essentially connects to every nook and cranny of your body. And it's been shown to have beneficial effects for your cardiovascular system, for your in levels of inflammation. So if you have some sort of autoimmune condition that causes inflammation, such as arthritis, multiple sclerosis, anything like that, going barefoot has been proven to reduce the inflammation response. And Dr. Oshman explains, even the slightest bump, if you bump the door, your immune system immediately responds by sending white blood cells to the place of injury. The neutrophils, which is the white blood cells, secrete a reactive oxygen species called free radicals in what's referred to as an oxidative burst. These are like Pac-Man. They're very important molecules that tear things apart. If bacteria have gotten through your skin, these free radicals will destroy the bacteria very quickly. If you have damaged cells, the free radicals will break them apart, so there is a space for healthy cells to move in and repair the tissue. That's known as the inflammatory response. What we have discovered that is truly profound is this. We now understand why you get the inflammatory response, which has the five characteristics: pain, redness, heat, loss of range of motion, and swelling. All of these are hallmarks of inflammation. It turns out it doesn't have to happen. Some of the free radicals sometimes leak into surrounding tissue as well and can damage healthy tissue. That's what causes the inflammatory response. So what's happening with grounding, according to the studies that Dr. Oshman has done, is the conductivity of the earth that you're absorbing is placing the electrons are migrating into your body, spreading through your tissues, neutralizing the free radicals through their electrical charge. So they cancel each other out. And it looks like we have our guests on the line, so we'll go ahead and bring them on now. Hi there, welcome to the show. Is this Sean or Jordan?
This is Jordan.
Hello, Jordan. So great to have you. Is Sean going to be calling in on a separate line?
Yes, he's calling in on a separate line right now.
Okay, excellent. Well, while we are waiting for him, we'll go ahead and introduce you. Jordan and Sean are part of a folk duo called Flagship Romance. They're from Jacksonville, just like our co-host, John, and pretty much everyone else associated with this channel. So our monthly Jacksonville is Awesome Fest.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes. And they are very involved in a charity that they started called Clean Water Music Festival. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. And they also just performed at a nudist convention. So we're going to chat with them about these interesting topics. And there's Sean.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Hi, Sean.
I'm great. It's so so great that you could join us. Great to have you on the air.
So thrilled.
We would love to start by chatting about how your performance for the nudists went.
It went amazing. Like we've had this show booked for about a year now, and you know we're part of a house concert network. So a majority of what my duo Flagship Romance does, we go from house to house across the country, performing for people we've never met before. In intimate environments in order to make really, really special connections with people. And so when we found out that this nudist resort did concerts, we were like, well, that would at least make for a really great story. So we scared ourselves and we took this gig on, and it ended up being such a relaxed performance. It was amazing. It was really fun.
That's great. Glad you enjoyed it. Just out of curiosity, how many of the nudists that were there were wearing shoes?
that's a good question. I was keeping a lot of eye contact, so I'm not, you know.
you didn't want to look down.
Yeah, we didn't look down very often.
I would say probably about 5 people out of the 70 that were in attendance probably had shoes on.
Actually surprising to hear.
Yeah, a lot of nudists.
Yeah, usually they almost always wear shoes, which I think is the weirdest thing ever because they're naked everywhere else.
yeah. But no, it was such a funny experience. They were very it was very subdued. Like everyone that you would think when you go to a nudist resort that everyone's going to be very I don't know how you would say it. Maybe it's boisterous, maybe a little bit more free willing, and it was just a very if anything it was almost more of a conservative crowd. It was very, very intriguing for us going into it.
That's awesome. Definitely more adventurous than I would ever consider doing.
You should try it.
What was your attire for the concert?
My attire was completely normal. I did take off my shoes. So that was my contribution. Actually Jordan, we were in Missoula, Montana, the night before we were going to Idaho, and she saw this dress in this vintage shop that was on sale, and it was very sheer. And so she was like, you know what? I'm going to get this dress for the show tomorrow. And She altered her attire a little bit, and I altered my attire just a smidge. But other than that, it was same old, same old.
Yeah. Well, Sean did end up taking his shirt off at the end of the night when we were dancing.
Yes, I did. Yep, totally did. Totally did. So after us, there was a band called Atomic Jive that played, and they were like a throwback 50s band that just played a lot of classics, a lot of swing dancing. And so we were just sitting there watching everyone dance. We were having a beer. We had a really long week. And so we were watching this couple dance, and they were tearing it up, just absolutely just mind-blowing dance moves. And so they walked up to us, and we were talking about our performance, and we were talking about just their dance moves. And they're like, yeah, the guy was like, I'm a dance instructor, and I met my current girlfriend, who he was dancing with on the floor, by instructing her. And we just fell in love. And now we just, you know, we live together, and we dance all the time. And they actually took us out on the dance floor and showed us some moves. That was my first dance lesson ever, was at a nudist resort in Idaho with two naked people. It was
awesome.
Amazing.
Brings a whole new meaning to swing dancing there.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sean did a really good job, so I'm really thankful for the dance lesson.
You didn't even take one before your wedding?
No.
No.
Wow.
No. We kind of dance, you know, a bit together on stage with our music. So we're pretty in sync like that, but we've never done couples dancing. So now we've been bitten by the bug, so we're going to have to go take some lessons from some clothed people.
Yeah, there you go. I want to shift topics a little bit and talk about the Clean Water Music Festival and how that's going and what your plans for the future with that are.
Sean, sounds like you were going to talk.
Well, oh, yeah, I can take it. I can totally take it.
Yeah.
The planning for this, for our fourth annual Clean Water Music Fest is going so well. We started this event in 2012 because Jordan and I separately and collectively have always wanted to do something with our music and just with music in general to make a difference. You know, a lot of our peers and those who have come before us have really used their talents to make a difference in the world. And we thought, well, let's do it ourselves. Let's see what we can do. And so we stumbled across this staggering figure that there are 748 million people on this planet without access to a basic need, which is safe drinking water. Most women in developing countries have to walk miles upon miles to fetch filthy water that ends up getting them sick, ends up killing their children. It's a canary in the coal mine for a lot of other issues that are prevalent in these communities around the world. So we teamed up with this organization named Charity Water. They're based out of New York City. They have a 100% model, which means that 100% of all public donations go directly to the field to provide this basic need to those who need it. So we thought that was a very strong organization to align our career with, and we started the Clean Water Music Fest in 2012 with a goal of maybe raising a couple $1,000 to help build a well. And our community and our amazing group of local musicians and artisans and food truck vendors have really come together. And since our inaugural year in 2012, we've been able to raise over $90,000 for these clean water projects. So we've built wells in Ethiopia, Rwanda, and the Sahel region of Africa. And it's just to know that every single penny of what we do with this festival goes to the cause is something that just makes us smile, and it keeps people coming back year after year. So this year, it's going to be bigger and better. We have three national acts jumping on board this year, and we have our food truck court and a silent auction. And again, 100% of the proceeds are going directly to the cause this year.
And that's awesome. Here in Jacksonville. Where do you hold this?
We hold it at the Ponte Beach Concert Hall. We hold it on Saturday, September 26th. The last couple of years, we've kind of nailed down that it's always going to be the last Saturday in September. So this year, it's Saturday, September 26th at the Ponte Beach Concert Hall, and it's going on all day from about noon to 11 p.m.
All right. Check that out.
Yeah, we'd love
to
see you there. And it's very family friendly. That's another thing that we try to keep in mind. You know, it's something fun for everyone.
No nudist performers?
No nudist performers this year. Nice. You know, we're hoping that the festival branches out. So if it does branch out all the way to Worley, Idaho, and they decide to put on a Clean Water Music Fest at the resort, we would love that, and we would definitely
be, awesome.
Be there to see that happen.
But your
that's
festival,
awesome.
I would assume, is barefoot friendly.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. So I have another question for Sean.
Okay.
I guess Jordan can answer her side of the question as well after this. So Sean, I have been following your music since Sean Fisher and the Jukebox Gypsies added me on MySpace like 10 years ago. So I was wondering, with how much work you've been putting into Flagship Romance, have you been putting any thought into continuing your other music career with Son of a Bad Man or your individual singing and songwriting, or is it all 100% Flagship Romance now?
It is all 100% Flagship Romance now. So Son of a Bad Man, after we got dropped from Universal Republic, everything kind of fizzled out. You know, everyone in the band had put many years, probably about 4 or 5 years, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not very many years, but in terms of a young band, it is. We put a lot of years into making this thing work. And, you know, it got to the point where we were all spinning our wheels, you know, the inspiration and the creativity just kind of fizzled out when it came to that project. And, you know, we all left on really great terms, and everyone who has split off and continued to do music is actually doing wonderful right now. You know, and when it comes to Flagship Romance, it's almost like a no-brainer for me personally, because I've always been someone who deals with a lot of social anxiety. I've dealt with a lot of depression. I always thought that pursuing a music career, I would always be alone. You know, I'd be married to five guys, or I'd be married to my guitar, but I would always be alone, you know, regardless of how many people come to the shows. Because you always go back to your hotel room. You're always, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So when Jordan and I started making music together with no intentions of ever becoming a duo, and we started performing out, you know, people would come up to us after the shows and just be like, thank you so much for your chemistry, and thank you so much for showing us that it's okay to love, and that it's okay to, you know, be transparent and be completely open and honest when you're on stage. And it was just like, it became like so much more of a deeper thing in conjunction with, you know, we get to travel now around the country making a living, and I get to be with my best friend every day, all day, and it never gets old, hardly ever get in fights. And our connection has inspired a lot of people around the world, and it's something that, to me, it's something that I can't let go of. I couldn't. It's way too heavy of a thing for me at this point to ever think about letting go of.
Gotcha. And Jordan, is your answer pretty much the same for that?
Yeah, I was sitting here listening to him going, well, he just said every single thing I would have said. But, yeah, I mean, it really is, you know, I had come to that realization when I was singing jazz in my solo career. And, you know, I thought, I'm just going to be alone forever, because no one's ever going to understand this way of living. Like, no one, you know, no guy is ever going to be able to understand my schedule. And I had kind of come to terms with that. And then, you know, now that we're doing music together, it really feels like we're on like a working vacation at all times. You know, it's just, it really feels like a dream. So it's, I could never desire anything more than what we have. And doing music by myself was never, it was not nearly as fulfilling as what we do. So I feel the same way.
Yeah. And just one more thing from an artist, not just from a romantic standpoint, and, you know, I get to be with my wife all the time, which is wonderful in itself. From an artistic standpoint and from a strictly writing standpoint, I can safely say that I have never felt more in my own skin, and more in my own elements. I've actually never been as productive as a writer than I have in the last couple of years. It was kind of an awakening for me, you know, just to strip it all back to the guitar and just let it all be about the writing and let it all be about the experience of just creating something 100% honest without worrying about what some guy in a suit in New York City is going to think about the song. You know, it's been a very eye-opening, growing experience for me personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was it like blending your two different writing styles into one basic concept?
Yeah. It was surprisingly seamless. And I think the main reason for that was we were going into this with absolutely zero expectations. Sometimes when you start a band or you start a project, you know, everyone kind of has this ethos of, well, we're going to be a band like this, or we're going to sound like this, or our influences are this, so we're going to mimic, we're going to do our best to put that forth. When Jordan and I started writing, we just wrote whatever felt good. Like, sometimes we'd write a song that was Latin-influenced, sometimes we'd write a song that's country-influenced, sometimes we'd write a song...
Drop the audio there. Sean, are you still on the line?
I can hear him talking upstairs.
yeah, it's still saying that the phone's connected, but it's...
Oh, that's strange.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Can you hear me? Yeah, it's really... I think another thing that really is important about the way we write is that we kind of, a long time ago, we just dropped any sort of ego we had with the writing process. So I know in, like, you know, past writing sessions, it's, you know, it's easy to kind of let your ego get in the way. And like Sean said, like, you know, try to mimic something, try to make a song, like fit it into a different box. And we've never done that. So it's been just really just an awesome experience that, you know, I just never knew writing could be this way. So, am I still on the line?
Yes, you're still there. That's great that you were able to make it so seamless. I guess since a lot of your songs focus on love and there's so much love between you, that probably makes it easier.
Yeah, and you know, lately it's been since we've been traveling so much and meeting all these incredible people and hearing all of their stories, you know, it's really kind of expanded our writing to be a lot more of a global, you know, theme rather than just our relationship. I mean, our first record was, you know, all love songs, which made total sense at the time. But, you know, now we're really trying to just kind of we're just really writing about our life and about the people we meet, and it's been really, you know, a fun way to just kind of tell everyone's story.
That's great. Where do you see yourself in terms of career, family, life in general, your projects in 5 years?
In 5 years, wow. You know, I don't even know where we're going to be in 2 months, but you know, we have goals. You know, I mean, at the moment, we've you know, kind of hit the goals that we wanted to hit at this point, where which is just being able to tour full time, not have any other job except for music. And you know, we just kind of, our vision is that, you know, we keep going around the country and we're playing in all of these different markets, and we're playing, you know, a lot of these house concerts, where when someone books us for a house concert, they invite like 30 to 40 of their friends, which we've never met any of them. And we play them, you know, an hour and a half of songs that they've never heard before. And it just creates this really intimate environment. We end up making friends versus fans. And so our goal is just to keep going back to these places and keep making these connections. And the more we return to a market, for instance, recently we returned to Tallahassee, and we had absolutely no idea, but the venue that we had booked, it was like a 200-seat listening room that was completely sold out. And we didn't even realize that we had, you know, created this desire, you know, there in that market. And so, you know, we're just hoping to just keep little by little, just, you know, growing and growing and growing, so that, you know, once we're to the point where we have a lot of demand, you know, we're the ones that are in control of our career, instead of, you know, a record label or you know, I mean, there are good record labels, but, you know, just we want to make sure that we have the artistic integrity, which is something that we lost, you know, separately when we were doing our other music. So that's really the goal. And when it comes to family, you know, we never say never, but, you know, at this point we don't see how we'd want to have children, you know, for a while. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. We just kind of are going with the flow, and it's working out pretty well. So
awesome. So you mentioned that you book the house concerts. What is the process if someone is wanting to book a house concert, like if one of our listeners wanted to host one?
Yeah. Well, we have email address, which is booking@flagshipromance.com. And if anybody is interested, they basically just let us know where they live, you know, what time frame, you know, what months looks best for them, and we would basically just send them, you know, kind of the 101 on house concerts. It's really, you know, every house concert is different. A lot of people, you know, invite their friends, and invite some people do, you know, potluck, and it's BYOB, and it's just, it's basically just a donation, a suggested donation, that 100% of that goes to the artist. And we come and we set up our own sound system, and we play, you know, one to two sets, and we just have a really, really, really great time. And, you know, there are a bunch of other little details that, you know, we can go over, but it's really simple.
That's awesome. Well, we are almost out of time, so we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
Being in Jacksonville, I'll definitely have to check you out. Do you do anything other than these house concerts right now? And I know you have, of course, the one coming up next month.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. Did you say, do we have other shows that we do besides house concerts?
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. We love playing, we're really into playing unique venues, you know, like listening rooms, and we occasionally play coffee shops. We played a pizza place last night in Leavenworth, Washington, where we are right now. And we play festivals. We love playing folk festivals, and we're open to it all. Our main objective is just to play for people that come to absolutely listen to music. You know, we don't like to be the background noise.
Right, right. That makes a
lot of sense. Awesome. Well, we've got less than a minute, so I'm going to have to cut you off. But thank you again for joining us. It was great chatting with you. Take care. Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. Enjoy your day.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. So again, that was Sean and Jordan Fisher of Flagship Romance, based in Jacksonville, Florida, currently on a permanent tour. If you want to book a house concert with them, email booking@flagshipromance.com. That concludes this week's show. Make sure you tune in next week for more news, current events, and special guests. We're hoping to get some more awesome guests on next week. If you have any suggestions of who to ask, go ahead and email me or John. And yeah, we're about to get cut off. So bye!